You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking to Juan Alonso Rodriguez. He's talking to me from Seattle. Juan, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Juan, let's talk about what you're working on at the moment. Just to jump right into your studio, what are you currently working on?
Right now, I'm working on a series of paintings that are done with acrylic on unprimed canvas. And they're part of a pattern series, but these are based on just flowing paint. And so I've been working with the color indigo, which I'm very partial to blues. And whenever I get a chance to work with blues, it's always a treat for me. And I'm working on this series of fairly large paintings, and I keep thinking that every time I do one, gets a little bit better, which I guess is the whole idea of you know, practicing making better. So I'm working on these paintings called Indigo Flow. I did one with silver metallic paint called Silver Flow, and it's an ongoing series. I've been working on these for a while and working
and
on.
How large are they? How large are these paintings that we're talking about?
So they're between 42 by 42 to 48 by 48, which is not huge, but when you're handling these, the way that I work, part of it I do flat, and then I have to put them up on the wall to do some of the dripping that happens with the paint, and then sometimes I have to stop it, so I have to bring it down from the wall and then twist it around to make sure that the paint is going where I want it to go. So getting larger than that can be a little tricky, although I haven't ruled it out.
Okay. And you said on acrylic on unprimed canvas. I would think that would present some like difficulties or challenges because it's unprimed. I mean, it can go through the canvas, right? It's absorbing the canvas. It's not sitting on the canvas, really, right?
Right. It is. There are challenges to it, and then there are advantages to it. Now, if I were working with oil paints, I would not want to do that because the oil paints on raw canvas will react poorly. I'm working with fluid acrylics, and the whole reason I started doing these without priming the canvas, it actually makes it a little bit easier for me to paint a straight line without having the canvas primed. That's one of the advantages. I don't use tape to create lines. I just do it freehand. And when I'm using the natural thread of the fabric, it makes it a little bit easier to create a straight line. The second thing that I like about it is that I wanted the work to have the feel of cloth. And without priming the canvas, I get that a little bit more than if I had primed it, even though you would still see a little bit of the weave. But without the priming, it really shows up, and it shows the imperfections in the canvas, and I love that look.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and that makes sense, the kind of line, because obviously when you're stretching it square, as I guess it should be stretched, you're saying the line of the kind of weave of the canvas sort of holds the paint in a line as opposed to a gessoed surface where it can go anywhere, right?
Right, right. And sometimes, you know, if I'm working on another project or if I'm working on a wood panel, I create a pattern with the brush when I'm putting the gesso on. And I purposely do that to create more texture and to create a pattern in the background of the painting. But with this particular series that I'm working on now, it's just really great to just follow the thread of the fabric.
That's exciting. And what will happen with these works? Are you just making them for a potential show, or are these going to go somewhere?
No, I have no actual show scheduled. Interestingly enough, a couple of the pieces that I just finished last week were snapped up by a collector. So that was a great surprise. So now
you mean someone coming, getting them out of your studio, buying them right out of your studio?
Yeah, they were purchased right from the studio. Yeah.
That is nice. Congratulations for that.
Thank you. Yeah. It's always nice when that happens, and especially when I know the collector and I know that they really feel strongly about the work and they're buying. I like when collectors buy work that they really like, and not because they feel like they are supposed to be purchasing somebody's work because someone else told them to, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That makes a big difference, like for an investment, because an art consultant is telling them to buy it, kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
And so let's talk a little bit about public work, because while you're exhibiting galleries, you know, it sounds like you're not represented by a gallery, but continue to do public work. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I was represented by a gallery here in Seattle from 1989 to 2013. And it was Francine Setter's Gallery, which, you know, I thought was the top gallery in the city. And I was really happy with her. And then she closed the doors. And I felt like I had been here for so long that it was very easy for me to be found if somebody was interested in my work. Now, I still would like representation outside of Washington State. But as far as being here locally, I didn't feel like I needed to find another gallery to represent me. But at the same time that I've been creating studio work, I don't know, for the last maybe 12 years or so, I've been creating public work, which is a whole different game. It's you have to approach it very, very differently, and it's very challenging, but it's also very rewarding. There's a big difference between the work that I do in the studio. I can be completely self-absorbed and just create work that I feel really strongly about, that I think is going to be, you know, I create work in the studio basically in a very selfish way. I feel that I need to get something out of the process of the creation. And when I'm creating work for a public setting, I have to take into consideration what the organization that is purchasing the work, who the audience is going to be. The last piece that I did was a large sculpture. It's about 12 feet tall and about, I don't know, it's probably like 6 feet wide. And it's called Hoodie. And the piece was for the new edition of the Automotive Center for Renton Technical College. And I did a lot of research as far as what the school had been, before, how they started out creating planes for the war, and how it has changed over the years, and how the people that have been going to the school have changed. And I feel like for a technical school, I felt that I needed to get the feel of the people that are going there. There are a lot of immigrants that go there to study. These are a lot of people like myself that came to this country for a better life, and they're trying to better themselves by going to school and learning a trade. And so I put a lot of, when I was researching and I was creating a proposal, I put a lot of thought into what symbolism could be included that would give you the feel of striving for something, sort of pushing against the wind, moving forward, reaching for something that's higher. So you have to think of all those things, because it's not a selfish creation. It's something that you're creating. In a way, it's a collaboration, because I'm designing it, someone else is fabricating the work, and then I'm presenting it, and it's a permanent piece that someone else is going to own and is going to have to live with and be happy about it.
Well, and this is on a campus, is that correct?
Yes, it is, yeah.
So it's also in dialogue, as I think you're saying, also with the whole campus and the student body and
right.
Everybody that walks by it every day.
Right, and I failed to mention the reason it's called Hoodie is because it's in the front of the automotive department. I wanted it to also resemble an old style hood ornament. And so that's how the name came about, and also part of the design as well.
And that was from an open call, or is how that came about?
Sort of. It's I am on the roster for the Washington State Arts Commission. So I've applied, you know, every couple of years you reapply or you update your materials. And so I'm already in this roster of public artists in the state of Washington. And so whenever we have the 1% for art here in the state, and so if a new building that's state-owned is creating a new addition or building something new, then they automatically have a 1% of the total budget to create some public art for the building. So being on the roster already, these folks that were going to build this addition were already looking at some of the artists on the roster, and they narrowed it down to a few. They had some finalists, and we went for an interview, and then I was selected for that particular project. So after you get selected, then, of course, you have to come up with a proposal that may or may not be accepted by whoever is commissioning the piece. I was fortunate enough that, I like the fact that I do my research early on, and I spend a lot of time doing research so that when I do come up with a proposal, I put a lot of thought into it, so the chances of being accepted is a little bit higher than if somebody just kind of comes up with something very quickly without putting too much thought into it.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, that more, or your perspective on these things, because you're born in Cuba, and you're a self-taught artist, and you're working with a lot of public entities and having a lot of kind of visibility in the public sphere. You're kind of talking a little bit about how you related to the campus and the people that are there, because you also came to this country as I believe you said, kind of looking for a better life. Do you think some of that is evident in your work, is part of what gets into the public art that you make as well as your paintings?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. And I also think that it helps me be selected for some of these projects, because I think that, in fact, I always ask for feedback. And I think for this particular project and others that I've done in the past, too, I think people want to know that they are hiring someone to create work that has some sort of understanding and acknowledgement of what is going on with the audience for the project. And I feel that I do put a lot of thought into that. And I know what it's like to struggle to get an education. I know what it feels like to, be the oddball and the one that doesn't fit in. And I want people to feel that they fit. I want people to feel like, no, I am doing this for you, and I relate to whatever it is that you're going through, as well as creating something that's universal that anyone can relate to. But I think that, I mean, I've talked about this before in a couple of different interviews, and I think we all bring whatever our roots are and wherever we're from. We bring that into the work that we create if we are artists of any sort, whether we're musicians or writers or visual artists. But I think that when your childhood is a little bit more traumatic, as it is for a lot of immigrants, I think that makes that sort of stamps that part of your life. And I think it's harder to get away from that. If something that you have gone through as a child has been traumatic. For me, I lost my mom when I was very young, and then my father said that he thought that I should come to this country when I was when he actually first talked to me about it. I was 8 years old, and I came when I was 9, turned 10 a month after I arrived in the U.S. So that creates a whole scenario for for me to always keep in mind some of the things that I went through, and the fact that I want to have that better life that my father sent me here for. And I want to, even though he's no longer around, I want that legacy of his to be true and to remain true. So I think I definitely put myself and everything, every experience that I've had into the work that I create, whether it's public or studio work. And, you know, this work with the patterns, you know, some of the works with the blues, I remember like the ocean and living in Cuba and being at the beach, which is my favorite place to be. I remember the railings that my father from his wrought iron shop designed for the house that we built. And I remember loving those designs and liking them so much that another project that I did, I sort of distilled three of the designs that were part of the railing, and I created six sculptures for another school that I felt I wanted to kind of continue that legacy of my father's work that I was so proud of. And just
was that the Sentinel series for the
yeah that's the Sentinels.
That's fascinating. And so maybe we should talk about another public project like the Sentinel series. I also like the mosaics that you've done for I think the International Airport. Maybe I really love those and would like to talk about those, and they also have what looks like a lot of wonderful blues in them. Before we do, the fact that you don't have an MFA, which is, you know, what so many artists think is necessary to succeed and do all the things you're doing. And I always say, if artists ask me, is an MFA important? I think, no, it's not really important. History tells us that it's a fairly recent invention, the MFA. Have you ever felt that that not having that kind of higher art education has held you back in any way?
Well, I live in Seattle, and a lot of the artists here have gone to one of two schools, either Cornish College for the Arts or the University of Washington. Many have received a degree, MFA, or maybe not that much, but there's a lot of people here, a lot of artists that have an education. I dropped out of high school before 12th grade. I finally went back a couple of years later and received my whatever equivalency diploma that they offered just to say that I had graduated. But I've never gone to college. I've never gone to university. And I think maybe the only way that I can think of that it has kept me back a little bit is that I feel like some collectors might look at a resume, and if they see self-taught, they might think twice about collecting the work. But I think that that's such a small percentage of people. I think I think most people buy work that they really feel strongly about. And since most people at this point, I think a lot of people think that I do have an education, and it's not something that people ask really. It's always there on my resume. It's clear for everybody to see. I've never lied about it, but I think that the ingredient that you need the most for being a successful artist in whatever success means to you is to have a certain amount of talent, develop it, and just know that that's your passion, that is really the only thing that you want to do, that nothing is going to keep you from doing it. And I think that's way more important than having a degree in art.
I think so too. Well said. And so let's maybe talk about one other piece of public work. In your paintings, there's so many patterns and all this geometry, and it seems in your public work, there's that too, though, you know, sometimes you depart from that, like in some of the murals. I think there was one called Paradise and others that seem to be where you're getting into different kinds of floral patterns, and the public work seems to be, and I don't know all of your paintings, but from what I've seen online, some of the paintings look very geometric, whereas the sculptural work and public work often looks very organic and floral-like, like in the Paradise series or in the, you know, the other ones, the Four Zones Eastern. Are those also, if you can talk a little bit about that,
Yeah, so I'd love to tell you a little bit more about Paradise, which is a column at Seattle International Airport. At the time that I was commissioned to do that piece, I was finishing up a whole series, and I did a lot of paintings from this series that were they were floral, they were botanical, and the reason why that series got started is because in 1995, my oldest sister came from Cuba. And, of course, I had not seen her in 29 years. And when I got together with her, I just had to ask so many questions. And I had to ask about, you know, what my parents were like, what she got to know them way more than I did. And she told me this one story that just really stuck in my head. When my parents were not married yet, when they were first met, my father worked in my grandfather's wrought iron shop, and my mom was a potter, and she painted these terracotta pots with flowers. And at one point, my father was making these wrought iron vases for her pots, and they would sell them together. And when my sister told me that story, I thought that is like the greatest story I'd heard. I thought, what a great way to work together when you first meet, and it was sort of romantic, and it gave me this background on my parents that I didn't know. I didn't know that they were so artistic, because I honestly didn't know where I got it from. And so I did this whole series of paintings that were that incorporated floral patterns or flowers or botanical images and a lot of scrolls like wrought iron, something you would see in a wrought iron fence or something like that. So I did a lot of work that had to do with that. And when I was asked to do a design for the column at the airport, that's sort of what they were looking for, because that's the work that I had submitted as far as being interested in doing this project. And this was a great project because it was one of the first ones that I did. And the nice thing about it is that it was done through the King County Arts Commission for the Port of Seattle, which, you know, handles the airport and all other kinds of ports coming in. But they had one fabricator translating all, I think there are 9 columns altogether. So there are 9 different artists doing very, very different work. And one fabricator did it for all the 9 artists. So each individual artist did not have to individually go out and find the fabricator to create this column. So I was very involved with picking out colors and making sure the design was done properly. But it was a fairly easy project to do.
Well, that's a wonderful story. I love hearing that, and it is very kind of you know, romantic and kind of nostalgic. That's really lovely and beautiful colors. Beautiful column that is.
Thank you.
Juan, before I ask you the last question, is there anything else you want to say in this interview that you wished I had asked, or anything you want to plug, or anything at all before I ask you one more question?
I think the only thing that I would want to add as far as things to know about me is, like, you know, working on the Seattle Arts Commission and being on the Public Art Advisory Committee, that's been like a really rewarding thing for me. I get to see the other side of how these projects come about, and I get to help younger, maybe emerging artists, as well as very established artists to make sure that their project goes along smoothly.
So tell me a little bit more about that. You're on the Seattle Arts Commission that works with Percent for Art projects.
So yeah, I'm one of gosh, I don't even know how many of us there are. I keep wanting to say 15, but I'm not sure. So I'm on the Seattle Arts Commission, which is a volunteer group that works with the Office of Arts and Culture here in Seattle. And what we do is we oversee a lot of stuff that's happening with when it comes to funding or grants or what is happening art-wise in the city. And then there's many subcommittees, and I serve on the Public Art Advisory Committee, which is one of the reasons why I was interested in being on the Arts Commission. It's because since I do create public work, I want to make sure that the city gets the best work possible. And so after an artist has been selected for a project by an independent panel, they create a proposal, and then the proposal comes to our committee, and then we kind of take a look at it, see if it's appropriate for where it's going, make sure that the artist knows how to create a budget, because what a lot of people don't realize is that a public art budget seems like it's going to be a lot of money, but the artist ends up getting a fairly small percentage of the overall budget, because you have to think about engineering, you have to think about there might be some extra construction that has to happen, you have to think about fabrication, insurance, there's all these other things that are involved, and by the time you finish, you might get, 15% of the total budget, but you have this great piece that you are hopefully very proud of completing, and that is also going to help you find other public projects in the future. So, and I like the idea of helping other artists get their work done, and particularly looking at things from a very equitable point of view. There are some people that need a little bit more assistance than others, and so that's a very rewarding thing for me.
That is exciting. And is that a volunteer position as well?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is something important for a lot of artists, curators, people to get involved with, so they can see things from both sides and help artists develop public projects that not only work, but of course, enable them to make money off it as opposed to going over budget and all the problems that can happen. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Let me ask you what you're reading now. The last question, which I'm always interested in, could be off topic or anything at all.
It's I'm reading a new publication by David Sedaris, and it's his diaries from the 70s to 2005, I think they are. And I've always enjoyed reading his stories because, I think he's one of those few people that makes me laugh out loud when I'm reading one of his books. And I just started reading this. My favorite one of his was Me Talk Pretty One Day. And I think that's by far his best book of essays. And so that's what I'm reading now. I feel like I needed something light, and I needed something to take my mind off some of the heaviness that is going on in the world right now.
Juan, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on here.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.